Hi, everybody. It's time for Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. This is the weekly program about the arts, music, culture, and humanities that are natural resources in western Wisconsin. Today, we're packed tighter than the bubbles in a glass of Guinness. So let's get underway. Today, Charlie Parr on his music and his new CD. Jim Oliver spends time with Teddy Roosevelt. You'll see what I mean. You'll meet a lady who loves horses, saves horses, and helps them live out their lives with dignity, all the while helping humans at the same time. We'll see where the confluence meter sits. And right here is a good place to start. Spring and fall art tours abound in western Wisconsin, and this weekend, Fresh Art offers theirs. Durand, Wisconsin artist Jean Acola provides details in a brief phone call. This is becoming one of the granddads of art tours. This is in its 17th year, isn't it?
Right. I know. I can't believe. Like most things, time's flying.
How can anyone resist this quote, the wildflower-laden hills of Pepin and Pierce counties?
Yes. Well, you know, we always think of a great autumn-colored hill.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But people tend to forget about the wildflower-laden hills. Well, actually, the large flowered trillium are done blooming, but it's just spectacular with wildflowers, too, mm-hmm. throughout the season.
June 5th, 6th, and 7th, you have 13 artist studios and galleries, Old Country Schoolhouse. You have some new people. You want to tell us about them?
Yes, we have at Site 8 in Bay City, Studio Backwaters Studio, with David Meixner. And he's been a clay artist doing pottery for many years, but he's also gotten into some fabulous outdoor, mostly bird photography. So I guess he has some nice little trails to hike in the backwaters down there on the Mississippi. And then Leah Werner on a county CC between Plum City and Maiden Rock. She's a clay artist also, and she does these interesting animal pieces. Sometimes she just does the portraits, and other times it's, you know, maybe a body of work. One I know in particular that's about trying to represent human characteristics using animals.
Okay.
So they have unusual expressions like anger and things like that that you don't normally see in it, like a rabbit.
Sure. So were you one of the originators of this tour?
Yes, I was with Linda Day and Diane Milner. Linda Day and I are both still on the tour.
Spring, it appears, is a busy time for you. You just completed an entire week of hanging with artists in Durand.
Right. We had our plein air event called Go Paint. We had about 20 artists here painting almost all week, all day, you know, half the night, doing nocturnes as well as daytime landscapes. It was really fun.
Give us the particulars, if you would, Jean, of the Fresh Art Spring Tour. You have a website, obviously, which we'll remind people of, but you can pick up brochures and maps at locations in western Wisconsin and eastern Minnesota. And give us the times and the dates, if you would.
Okay, it starts this coming Friday, the 5th, and then Saturday and Sunday, all days from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at all the sites. Yeah, you can find brochures. We've been spreading them around. I think we printed 15,000 of them. So, and they have the map. So it's really a self-guided tour. Kind of keep an eye out for signs, and you'll see signs directing you to the closest site. You know, my place in Durand, and then, of course, I have brochures here, as do all of the other sites. So you don't really have to worry about it too much, but you could go online to freshart.org, and there's even a downloadable map there, too, if you really want to plan your route ahead of time.
Locations included are Durand, Pepin, Stockholm, Maiden Rock, Bay City, Plum City, and Arkansas. The studios and galleries have media like paintings, pottery, textiles, jewelry, metal, and more. This is a self-guided tour. Usually at places people have amenities?
Oh, yeah. There's always, you know, some beverages. Most places there's restrooms. There's a few places that are just small personal studios.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a big geographic area, so whatever you need, you can basically find.
Yeah. You have the Fresh Art Spring Tour of 2015. It's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I like the fact that you have it 3 days and nice long hours each day, because that gives people the ability to take it all in if they want to. It'd be a wonderful weekend.
Sometimes people don't like to deal with any crowds or anything, so that they can do a leisurely trip on Friday.
Sure.
And Sunday afternoons are kind of quiet as well, but
cool.
Thanks for letting people know about it. We appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am. Again, the website is freshart.org. Have a good weekend, everybody. Charlie Parr is just down the road, as is A Place of Equestrian Kindness. Teddy Roosevelt Lives On, and more. Here's a Spectrum memo. Prudence Johnson performs Saturday from 5 to 9 p.m. That's at the Bell Street Gallery, and that's on Madeline Island. Nice place. Last week, another crucial vote came down in Madison, the next chapter in Will They or Won't They Have a New Performing Arts Center in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Past chapters include the idea, the forming of the partnerships, the research, selling the concept, the referendum, those putting the con in confluence, the governor's limited support, the Joint Finance Committee Part 1, and the Joint Finance Committee Part 2. Battles in a commotion whose aftermath will either be the confluence center or something else on a piece of land where the Eau Claire River meets the Chippewa. Ben Richgruber is executive director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. Along with many others, he's been riding the currents of this tributary of frequent tribulation, and we thought it might be nice to see at what stage of the journey we now find ourselves. Anybody involved in this monumental assignment of working to help along the confluence concept better love a theme park and especially the roller coaster.
Very true.
To me, it's kind of like watching a soccer match. As the guy's going down the field, he kicks it. Go the other way, and he kicks. Oh, he doesn't make it.
It's been very back and forth. Lots of ups and downs along the way, and this state portion is no different. It's been back and forth. The Joint Finance Committee a few weeks ago removed funding for the confluence.
Yeah.
It was originally placed in the governor's capital budget as a non-state agency grant. And that would be then given to the...
Explain what a non-state agency grant is. Every time I hear the word grant, I think somebody's got to do a lot of legwork to get a grant.
Well, and in some cases, well, in many cases, we did. Obviously, we've been working on this project for a long time, so to prove its worth.
So this is a grant you've already...
Yeah, it's a grant we've applied for. The application was due, a while ago. I feel like September or October is when the grant was due. Yeah, we did fill quite a bit of paperwork out and got all the details to the folks in Madison so that it could then be placed in the governor's budget. The non-state agency grants are a pool of money that he has some jurisdiction over and can put into different capital projects around the state. Ah. And it's a non-state agency, so it's more of a private or a public-private like this. It's not going to a university or another state agency. It's a non-state agency that would be getting it. So that's where the name comes from. But we were originally placed in the non-state agency grant pool. It was a capital project. It was in front of the building commission. And then somehow, and I'm not sure of the complete logistics here, but it got moved into the operating side. So rather than the bonding through the traditional capital projects, it was just going to be more of a cash payment through the operating budget. And that's what the Joint Finance Committee had issue with, is that it was coming straight out of the essentially operating budget of the state as opposed to the capital budget.
Okay.
So they removed it. We then went back, spent a few weeks between then and now working very diligently, and all of our local elected reps did an excellent job on our behalf.
Cool.
So big thanks to them. But they worked really hard to get it placed back in the capital budget where it originally was. And that's what they voted on, and that's what they approved.
So what does this mean? Does it mean that you now have a green light, or is it still a yellow light?
It means that we've got a very strong yellow. Nothing is done until it's done. When the full legislature approves the final budget and the governor signs it, then we are
when does that happen?
Good to go. That should happen by the end of June here.
Okay.
I believe the budget has to be signed in by July 1 so they can start the fiscal year. So all of the fun and exciting political wrangling that happens on the floor will be happening over the next few weeks. Then hopefully everything stays as is. We feel cautiously optimistic. It's a pretty big hurdle for anyone at this point to remove things from the budget, but it's been done. So it's not a complete green light, but it's pretty good.
You should actually count how many times over the last few years you've had to use the term cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I think we should get a copyright on that one at this point.
You should. I think you own it now. Won't it be nice when, and well, we say when you can drop the word cautiously.
Definitely.
But then that's only optimistic yet. That still means that there's variables out there, will
right.
there?
And, you know, until the building is built, there'll be some variables.
Okay.
We've had to reduce scope when the governor went from 25, as we requested, down to 15. We had to amend the scope, change design a little bit, remove a few spaces, but our guiding principles are still the same. We're going to have an excellent experience for the performers, an amazing experience for the patrons, mm-hmm. and education is still key as well. So there's a lot that we're still able to keep as we adapt and resize the facility with the different budget.
Any of the original parameters could be added if someone came forward, a big philanthropist, and said, I want that back in? And
certainly. Yeah. Certainly. We had the original design committee got everybody together, all the local arts groups, the university, mm-hmm. All of us came together and essentially put together sort of a wish list. What would we really like to have in our ideal performing arts center?
Yeah.
And from there, we whittled down. We got rid of the nice-to-haves and put it back to the need-to-haves.
Okay.
So, yes, we'd certainly be able to expand where the funding to come from a source.
All right. We've made fun of the term cautiously optimistic. We've found that at the end of June, we could have a light green light, a full green light.
What? Let's go full on James Brown. I feel good. Yeah, things are going to move. Once the state budget is official, then we can definitely move forward. That the letter from the state, the fact that it's in there is enough for financing to occur so we can get the construction underway and really start moving forward.
Is that when everyone else who has pledged, like the city and the county, they come forward? Or do they happen now because the state has said?
Both the city and the county had contingencies in their pledges that said the state had to commit.
Okay.
And I believe they both did say the state had to commit 25. So both of those entities are going to have to go back and amend their agreements now that it's 15 from the state, not 25. But again, cautiously optimistic that both entities are still in favor of this project. Obviously, it's had quite a bit of support, and that continues to grow.
So the amounts that they are putting in the kitty stay the same no matter what the state has decided to put in?
We sure hope that that's the case.
You haven't heard that it might be different?
No. As far as we've heard, everybody wants to stick to the numbers that they've put forward.
Cool. How's philanthropy going?
Philanthropy is fantastic. We just had a big announcement last week. The Oak Leaf Doctors are going to pool together and make a $1 million contribution, and that'll get naming rights for the lobby. So we're very excited about that.
Okay.
Many of them were already intending to give, and they decided to all work together and put their name on something. So that's fantastic. We're a little over $9 million pledged right now out of our goal of 13.5. That's just fantastic. That is the one thing that's been moving since the beginning of this project. From day one, there was philanthropy. And even through the roller coaster, the ups and downs, and all the political drama, we've had people continue to make pledges and continue to make donations. So that just shows the strength of this partnership and the project. People want to see it happen.
So as a guy that's been on the roller coaster, you're feeling pretty good?
Yeah. We've got a lot of exciting things happening. You can really feel the momentum building right now. A lot of the businesses in the community are starting to make their pledges and gifts. I was at a meeting yesterday where a group made a commitment. So we're excited. We'll be making that announcement pretty soon.
Neat.
And it just keeps happening. And I think now that the state has made their commitment, that was the one sort of lingering piece out there that some people wondered, well, maybe I'll wait till after the state commits. So we've already seen an uptick of action, and that's just been about a week now.
Let's say everything goes well. When does somebody put a shovel in the ground?
Shovel in the ground could start next year, and we could be watching shows by 2017, early 18.
Wow. Many things worth doing are some of the toughest things to get done.
We have learned that.
But when it's up, it'll be worth it as you look back. And to all participating, performing duties and due diligence on both sides of the river of discussion, thanks for keeping this a foremost concept that Eau Claire, in my opinion, has needed for some time. And for taking the time, the overtime, to guide it down the channels, something this big and this vital needs to travel. The confluence, to be continued. By the way, there will be more in-depth discussion Monday on the West Side as Rich Kramer keeps the conversation going. That's 10 a.m. Monday on Ideas Network stations in western Wisconsin. Still to come, one of Spring Valley's best, Bully for Jim Oliver, and the one and only Charlie Parr as Spectrum West continues. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting the surreal work of Madison artist Stephen Hilliard in Seeking the Sublime, on exhibit through July 15th. Visit and support information at mmam.org. When what someone does for a living literally takes their breath away, when it causes them to get emotional simply telling someone else about it, well, I think you can assume they're doing what they were meant to do and that it's making a difference. In the case of Sandy Gilbert, her career involves horsing around in the most serious and benevolent sense of that phrase. Sandy runs Refuge Farms in Spring Valley, Wisconsin, the pastures and place where horses who are old, frail, sick, unwanted, and disabled go to live and die with dignity and as much contentment as fresh love and shelter can provide. Well, what prompted me to want to talk with you and share your story with the people of Western Wisconsin was reading your spring 2015 newsletter, and it was specifically for me the section called In Loving Memory.
Yes.
I was so moved by the compassion in your words about these animals that I knew I wanted to learn more about what it is you do. Let's build a foundation. Tell us about the history of Refuge Farms.
Wonderful. Refuge Farms was founded 15 years ago. A friend of mine and I were working at a company in Chickasaw, Oklahoma. It's a border town of Oklahoma City. And both of us were horse people, and we both wanted to do more with our lives and our passion for horses than just ride them and have a few that we called our own. So we thought we would start to rescue some horses, and we specifically went after the layer of horse that's on the very bottom that most people look at and say, oh, that horse is good for nothing. Hmm. There are the horses that have wounds, that have had broken legs, that are terminal with cancer, that have breeding difficulties, or that are classified as mean horses. The horses that even the other rescues pass up on. Those are the ones that we decided we wanted to rescue, turn around and use those horses that had been completely rejected, and we would work with people that had been physically or sexually or emotionally abused. We would work with at-risk teens. We would work with people with cognitive or physical disabilities and use those horses and working with those horses and teaching people how to handle those horses to build self-esteem and self-confidence.
Wow.
And we thought, you know, how are we going to measure this? How are we going to know if we're successful? And Andy challenged me and said, well, let's put a number on it. You know, if you do how many horses in 10 years, how will we know we're successful? And I said, I can commit to 100 horses in 10 years. He looked at me and said, how about 150? And I said, sure.
Okay.
And last January, just about 14 and a half years, we rescued our 1,000th horse.
Wow.
1,000 horses. It was a cold day in January. And we helped a couple little mares cross. They were just so cold and so frozen and so ill.
Hmm.
And as I stood back, I realized that was number 1,000.
It's amazing how far into this you are. I mean, I can't tell you how impressed I am. How do you make contact with horses? How do you find horses that need help?
Well, when we first started, we thought we would have to go looking for horses, but I can tell you, Ellen, that the horses find us. We have a capacity here at the farm, and we are typically above capacity, and it's not an issue of finding horses. It's an issue of being able to deal with the horses that we are unable to accept just because of the capacity issue. We get calls, emails, literally every single calendar day.
Wow.
For at least one horse. Sometimes in a day, we'll get 3 to 5 requests. We are one of the few rescues in the country that will accept blind horses. So we have horses in our pastures here from Tennessee, from North Carolina, from upstate New York, blind horses that no one else would take. They were aggressive because they had been beaten with 2x4s. It's the blind horses now and on that we use in our horse handling classes. Blind horses are so perceptive and so aware and so in tune to the insecurities and the fears of the humans. They work magic every time we pair them with a young teenager. The adult in the household said, I wish you'd just run away. I wish you were dead. And this kid comes and binds to this blind horse. And when I say, what is it about Helen that attracted you to her? And he says, I can see the scars on her body. Nobody wanted her either.
Oh, my.
And these kids just turn into different human beings in front of us. Gentle, compassionate, caring human beings where 2 hours ago they were fist fighting with another student in the hallway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they were threatening to kill that kid. And now they're standing with the horse and hugging it and talking to it and just sharing their most inner deep secrets with these horses. And these horses are fantastic listeners. Our mission took off and we take them in. We give them respect. We give them food, we medically treat them, and they turn around and give us everything they have, absolutely everything they have. And they help humans all over with all kinds of needs to heal just a little bit more.
Everything you say is moving to me. This is a fascinating conversation with Sandy Gilbert. She's Executive Director of Refuge Farms Horse Rescue and Sanctuary. That's in Spring Valley. You know, dogs and cats and other domestics get a lot of attention. Those ASPCA television pieces have moved a lot of people, but It appears that horses have always needed someone like Sandy Gilbert. What should we know about horses? They're more perceived as a beast of burden. They're not perceived as pets. They run fast. People use them to make money. What more should we know about horses as the companion that they can be?
Well, first of all, we've done an excellent job at keeping our horses healthy now. We've learned so much about the horse that it's nothing now to make a horse live for 35 years. So we need to realize that when we breed, we're creating a creature that's going to be on Earth for at least 30 years. And a horse is not like a dog or a cat. You can't put it in a crate and put it in the garage. It needs room to move. It needs grass to eat or hay in the winter. It needs free and easy access to water. It can't live off of just snow. And it generates a pile of manure every single day.
Yeah.
They need space. They need room. They need love, and they need attention. I tell people that are thinking about getting a horse, just remember this, that on the hottest day in the summer and on the coldest day in the winter, that's when they're going to need you the most. When you want to be in the most is when you need to get outside the most, because that's when they're going to need you the most. They are remarkable animals. I have never met a mean horse. Every time I've met a horse with his ears back and his teeth out, he's defending himself. He thinks he's fighting for his life. They only kick, they only bite when they feel like they're in danger. They're remarkable animals, extremely perceptive, and some of us believe they're extremely spiritual as well. In the different states, depending upon where you go, in the state of Wisconsin, for instance, a horse is considered a wild animal. So for insurance purposes, if you want to have people next to your horses, it's considered the same as a lion or a tiger. And from a humane perspective, it's considered an agricultural animal. There really aren't too many rules and regulations on care of animals. Yep, they need to have shelter compensatory with the age and the condition of the horse. There's no laws in the state of Wisconsin that says they have to actually have a shelter with a roof on it. Our neighboring state, Minnesota, however, has changed their laws to treat horses as pets. So now you can no longer drag your horse behind your car. You'll go to jail. You can no longer not have water available for your horse. They treat you just as if you're not giving water to your dog in Minnesota. So the abuse cases and the laws are much stronger in other states. Wisconsin is an agricultural state, and so they treat the horse, as you said, as a beast of burden. They're a working animal, although over 90% of the horses in the state of Wisconsin are for entertainment purposes.
Are people like you working to change that?
We're trying. It's a long process, but we're not giving up. You can't.
You don't sound like someone who would give up anyway.
No,
so.
not on the horse.
Good for you. Refuge Farms is a multifaceted place. You have a lot of things, and we don't have enough time to talk about them all. You have a hospital building that I was reading about. You have things called the Open Barn. So what we need to leave people with is, how can people find out more information on their own, and how can people get involved? As many nonprofit organizations do, you have a wish list and you need help from people. Tell us how we can do that.
Well, Refuge Farms is one of the few 501c3s that I'm aware of that's completely volunteer. We reimburse no volunteers for mileage. We pay no entry fees to conferences or our own events. And our board of directors receive absolutely no money for any expenses whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Everything we raise goes to the horses. We have a website which is in desperate need of being rewritten. If anyone is willing to jump into that bucket with us, we desperately need our website updated. The young man that was maintaining it for us passed away unexpectedly and took the passwords with him. We need to totally replace the website, so we do need that help there. But we have a store in downtown Menominee. You can stop in and talk to us at the store. Email refugefarms@hotmail.com. We have a function called Barn Nights every Monday night. You know, we have 19 horses right now at the farm.
Sure.
And so we have at Barn Nights from 6 to 8 p.m. every Monday night. We come and we do anything that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Once a month, we have something called Progress Days, which is a fancy way, Alan, of saying work with your hands. We have bulletin boards on our website that tell you over the schedules and the dates for Progress Days and for Barn Nights. We do hold free horse handling classes. We teach you how to work with horses that are 3,000 pounds or little tiny Shetlands that'll drag you around. We teach you how to work safely with these horses with the utmost of respect to the horse. The object is that the horse is safe and the human is safe, and you develop a great relationship between the two. And we do have a wish list. Yes, we have a wish list on our website. We do have a new building going up this summer, which will have our first ever hospital building in it. So we'll have a sterile area where we can treat horses that come to us either half frozen or with maggots or wounds or broken legs. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to treat them, and it's the reward of 15 years is what I tell people. It's 15 years of hard work, and the reward is this hospital building.
Good
but,
for you.
But it's, we need help on all aspects. We need help at the store. We need help at the farm. Anything that you need to do to run an organization, name and address maintenance for our mailing list, we can use the help.
Well, it's inspiring and very interesting stuff. The website is refugefarms.org. Sandy Gilbert, it's been a pleasure talking to you. You're doing good work. Spring Valley in western Wisconsin, proud to call you a neighbor. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Once again, to learn more, and if you'd like to involve yourself, the website is refugefarms.org. This is Spectrum West. So nice to have you along this week. Jim Oliver has two guests to share this week, although there's only one on the other end of the phone conversation. Let's see what that's all about.
The communities of Taylor's Falls, Minnesota, and St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, will celebrate Wanigan Days Friday through Sunday, June the 12th through the 14th. Among the many events planned for the 57th Annual Festival will be a performance at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls by Adam Lindquist. Lindquist is a Theodore Roosevelt lookalike and entertainer who plays the charismatic 26th President of the United States, who is also an author, war hero, adventurer, and conservationist. Adam Lindquist joins us to talk about the former president and about his one-man show. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Well, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm going to ask you to give us some samples from your performance, but first I want to ask you what got you started with Teddy Roosevelt, the one-man show, and how long have you been doing it?
Great question. So I have been doing it about 8 years, and it started like many people who do what I do, is that you either look in the mirror one day or you get a photograph taken of you and you say, son of a gun, I kind of look like somebody. And mine ended up being Teddy Roosevelt. Now, I would have chosen George Clooney given my druthers, but of course, the good Lord blessed me, I guess, to look like Roosevelt. And having an acting background, I decided to see if I could actually recreate him. So I've been doing it for 8 years, and I've been very blessed to travel the country as Roosevelt, even though I'm a close to Wisconsin, Minnesota boy.
Well, now you have won some awards.
Yes. So there are national competitions, reenactors who sort of do small skit type things, and then there are all the way through to living history performers. And living history performers literally take on a character and they recreate that character, Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin. There's a variety of people in the country that do it. And I have won 3 years in a row, actually, as a national champion living history performer, and have been blessed to have competed in that and won national title with it.
Now, do you write your own material?
Well, Teddy Roosevelt does a pretty good job of writing my material for me, so all I have to really do is sort of fill in the blanks. But, yeah, I do write. Obviously, the theater show that I do is something that I write. And then there's, because I have a lot of programs that I do that are really off the cuff where I'm interacting with the public, you really have to sort of be able to know little bits and pieces of Roosevelt's life so that you can bring those out. So it's been a great learning experience for me. I really have acquired a fascination for Roosevelt as well as obviously a dedication to Roosevelt doing him. But the other thing that I've learned is that there's a lot of principles that he teaches us that I actually apply to my real life. And, you know, one of my favorites that I teach kids is do what you can with what you have where you are. And I believe Roosevelt's perspective of doing what you can where you are with the skills that you have is something that he does over and over in his life, from a childhood filled with asthma all the way through to being president to finally in the later stages of his life going on an adventure where he discovers what's now known as Rio Roosevelt, but at the time was called the River of Doubt, where he just took those skill sets and just kept reapplying them to his life over and over again. And as you and I talked about before we went on the air, I've certainly done that all of my life. I've been applying my marketing skills to a variety of industries, and now I get to do it as Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to start with a couple of topics here to let you change into your Teddy Roosevelt garb.
Okay.
And he's remembered for so many issues, but he dealt with conservation.
The conservation of natural resources is the fundamental problem. Unless we solve that problem, it will avail us little to solve all others. Of all the questions that can come before this great nation, short of its preservation and great war, there is none which compares in importance to the great central task of leaving this land, even a better land, for our descendants than it is for us. We have a belief that our resources in America are endless, and that is false. There is a delight in the hardy life of open. There are no words that can tell the hidden spirit of the wilderness, that can reveal its mystery, its melancholy, and its charm. But the nation behaves well if it treats the natural resources as assets, which it must turn over to the next generation increased and not impaired in value. Conservation means development as much as it does protection. Now, I got into conservation because as a child I was bedridden much of my life, and I spent my time reading about natural things. And those times when I could get out of the city into the country, I would collect them and put them in my pockets. Eventually, I would create at the ripe old age of 9 the Roosevelt Museum of Natural History. Now, keep in mind, it was in my room, but it was mine. And I learned from there that conservation, preserving things for future generations, was something that I was going to do if I was going to survive. And, of course, I was very fortunate that I became president and was able to do such, creating 230 million acres of land set aside for our next generations. That's the equivalent of 86,000 acres for every single day I was president.
Theodore Roosevelt, 26th president of the United States, as portrayed by Adam Lindquist, whose one-man show Roosevelt will be presented twice on Saturday, June the 13th at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. President Roosevelt is credited with founding something called the Progressive Party of 1912, sometimes referred to as the Bull Moose Party.
Absolutely. You need to understand, I had been in safari in Africa. My handpicked successor, Mr. Taft, was in office, and I was receiving notification from the newspaper men that Taft was undoing many of my things. And I said, you know, Taft is his own man. I'm sure he's following the rules. Well, when I got back to the United States, Taft was undoing much of the work that I had already put in place, and I decided that I was going to run under the Republican ticket. Now, I went to the Republican convention, and I was the candidate that the people wanted. But there was a new system in place, and with that new system, Mr. Taft was in charge. And, of course, he ended up getting the Republican nomination. Well, I needed to try to continue to do what I had done as president, and the best way to do it was to create a third party, the Progressive Party. My hat is in the ring, and I serve as fit as a bull moose. That name stuck, and I proceeded to create the Progressive Party. Now, I will tell you that my trip to Wisconsin as a progressive did not work out as well as I had hoped. You see, I was at a place called Milwaukee, 20,000 people waiting to hear me speak. I had just stepped out of a hotel and was stepping into my car when someone called my name, and I turned, and a madman shot me at point-blank range. The bullet ricocheted off my eyeglass case, and it went through my speech, doubled over, so it was 100 pages. The bullet went into my chest. My God, that man has pinked me. The Secret Service men wanted me to go to the hospital, and I said, absolutely not. I have 20,000 people waiting to hear my message. I spit in my hand, and I could see that I did not have blood in my hand, which meant that it was not a mortal wound. So I stood in front of 20,000 people, and I said, now, ladies and gentlemen, you must be very quiet, because I don't know if you quite understand it, but I have just been assassinated. Well, if people looked at me with awe, and I opened my jacket, and sure enough, my blouse was covered with blood. And I told them that I was expected to speak for 90 minutes that day, and if I did die in front of them, I wanted them to know that I have been the happiest man, the luckiest man ever to live in America. And I proceeded to speak for 60 minutes as my shoes filled with blood, and as I began to sway back and forth, the Secret Service men were holding me up. I proceeded to speak for another 20 minutes before finally they led me away. 80 minutes I told those people about the importance of the Progressive Party. That's how serious I was about being a progressive.
Let's take you off of the Roosevelt character for a minute. What happened to the Progressive Party of 1912?
The progressives did not win. They split the ticket. So half of the Republican Party voted with Roosevelt, actually more than half because Roosevelt comes in second. Mm-hmm. Taft takes a third, and the person that wins is Woodrow Wilson. Mm-hmm. And Roosevelt has zero respect for Woodrow Wilson. As a matter of fact, he blames him for dragging us into what's known then as the Great War, which later becomes World War I. Congress comes back and says, we want to recreate the Rough Riders. Roosevelt says, I am more than happy to take control of that. He goes to Wilson directly, and Wilson basically says, thank you so much, Mr. Roosevelt, you've had your service. And what really is the major concern is that Roosevelt is going to run again. And I think if he would have survived, Roosevelt probably would have been on the ticket again. There were a variety of things that happened, including the trip down the River of Doubt. and of course the loss of his youngest son, Quentin, in World War I. He was shot out of the air in France.
Well, we've been visiting with Adam Lindquist, whose one-man show, Roosevelt, about the 26th President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt, will be presented twice at 2 and at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, June the 13th, in the Elbow Room of the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. The show is part of the Wanigan Days Festival in Taylor's Falls, Minnesota, and St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. Go to either website, wanigandays.com, or festivaltheater.org. By the way, a Wanigan was a floating cook shanty and occasional bunkhouse used by the river rats or the lumberjacks, who drove spring log drives down the river, similar in nature to cowboys herding cattle across the Great Plains. Adam Lindquist, thanks so much for being with us and for sharing a bit of Theodore Roosevelt's life.
It has been a bully delight. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Another stellar job by Jim Oliver. Thank you, sir. This is Spectrum West. Thanks for joining us this week. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the 17th annual Fresh Art Spring Studio Tour, a self-guided road trip to 13 artist studios and galleries. It's June 5th through the 7th in the Lake Pepin and Chippewa River Valley area of Wisconsin. Details are at freshart.org. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. The Rural Artists of Wisconsin exhibit opens Friday at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory through July 15th. And let's see, Saturday, it's an evening of essays and poems by author Edward Morsfelder from the Hometown Gazette. If you're listening on Thursday, tonight, the Sounds Like Summer concert series begins at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire, featuring Easy Chair, The Juggernauts, and Brian Bethke. That all gets underway at 6:30 p.m. Lots of stuff getting underway for summer, as you might expect, including the Eau Claire Municipal Band 2015 Summer Concert Series. It begins next Wednesday, June 10th. They'll present 8 Wednesday concerts throughout June and July. The concerts are presented in the historic Donald Sarge Boyd Band Shell in beautiful Owen Park. I'm Al Ross. This is Spectrum West. And then there's Charlie Parr, one of the few musical artists out there who has carved a little cubbyhole, maybe whittled is a better word, in which only he and a handful of others dwell. His roots are deep, and they don't like to be disturbed too much. In fact, I might guess he doesn't even mind a few weeds around, because that's just the way things are. He's noted for being a part of the Duluth, Minnesota music scene, though he grew up in Austin, Minnesota, in the shadow of Hormel. His music is as original and unique as music gets. His new CD is called Stump Jumper, and he's coming to the Blue Ox Music Festival in Eau Claire for a Thursday, June 11th performance. He loves bare feet and recording in garages, yet is surrounded, as we all are, by amazing technology. Surprising that, and maybe you do, maybe I just don't know your whole library well enough, but if you don't, surprising you don't have a song about technology in my life.
Yeah, I don't, actually. It's not something I really think about too much. I'm neither kind of for it or against it. It's just kind of, it's there. It showed up, and now it's kind of here. And
I just think you'd probably come up with a pretty cool take on it.
You know, the thing I do really like that I've kind of gotten spoiled by is this GPS stuff. I've been traveling so much.
Oh, sure.
Driving into some of these bigger cities, it's intimidating, and that makes it a lot nicer.
Although it can lead you the wrong way every once in a while.
Actually, that's kind of funny, though. You know, when it insists that you need to take a left and there's absolutely no road there at all.
Right, yeah.
Get kind of a kick out of it.
Well, since we're talking to you while you're visiting your mom, I understand, let's go back to growing up with the people of Austin, Minnesota. Both parents worked long days in the meatpacking industry. I should tell you that it's not fair in my mind that unwanted emails are now called spam, by the way. That sort of does an injustice to the canned meat that I really think isn't all that bad.
Yeah, it is not fair. I've always thought about that. it's just a part of my life, you know. It's a part of Austin in general.
This is the time of year, summer, when I think back to what I did as a kid. So how did what young Charlie was shape what it is you do to put bread on the table today?
Oh, it's almost, you know, I can't imagine being anything like the way I am without the way that I grew up in this town. When I think about my past, I think about, you know, being 7 to about 13 being the good years, you know. The teenage years weren't that as much fun for me, but man, I, you know, all I did was play the guitar or attempt to, you know, try to. I was excited about it all the time. I listened to music and I rode my bike. I rode my bike everywhere. And Austin is the kind of size town that you can ride from one end to the other. And, you know, that had a huge effect on everything that happened after that. Because honestly, you know, I haven't had a job right now in 11 years. And what I do now is play the guitar and ride my bicycle.
Cool.
You know, so I haven't really, I'm still kind of a taller version of the 7-year-old me.
Well, you must have played your guitar a lot because you're good.
Thank you. I did. I mean, I got obsessed with it. It's the thing. I got super, and I still am. I get it. It's a funny feeling. It's like a fire. You know, I get really, really excited. I remember when I was a kid, you know, certain records that were in the house, Matt's Lips Calmer, Lightning Hopkins. You know, I just get super excited about listening to them, and I still do it. I've got those same exact records, and I still listen to them a lot, and I get really excited about them. It's a big deal to me. And when things start to go my way on the guitar and I feel like I'm making the kinds of sounds that I got excited about listening to, then it's a whole another level of happiness that I've achieved. You know, it's just a lot of joy comes into my life because of it, and it's never diminished. Before I had children and grown-up kind of responsibilities, I would literally play guitar for 6, 7 or more hours every day.
Wow.
And love every second of it.
Speaking of those recordings, listening to them now and going back to the ones you listened to that I read were your father's, was it the music, do you think, that impressed you, or did you want to know more about the person playing it?
It's a little bit of everything. I mean, it's definitely the music, but because of the times, especially with people like, you know, Charlie Patton or even Lemon Jefferson, who was a lot more popular, but there's a mystique around them just because they weren't well documented at the time. They were seen as a quick kind of buck for a record company, so that they weren't archived very well. Those two particular men, there's only one picture apiece of them, you know, so you kind of know what they look like, but you kind of don't, you know, and there's a lot of mystery and a lot of mythology around them, and that's fascinating. Just because it is, it's fascinating. We're also, you know, and we know a lot about Jimmy Rogers, but it's still, you know, there's still a mythology that fascinates me about him and his life. And Woody Guthrie, I just finished reading Klein's book called A Life, a fantastic study on Woody Guthrie's life. You know, we know a lot about Guthrie's life, but it's still this mythology. The Woody Guthrie, you know, in kind of all capital letters, is more than kind of the sum of the parts of Woody Guthrie. You know, it's more than either the man or the music, so I think that's fascinating to me too. Every time I'm near Tulsa, Oklahoma, I stop at the Woody Guthrie Archive. I'm a fan, and so I've read that book now 3 times, and every time I've read it, I've passed it on to someone who I think really needs to read it, and so I've bought it twice.
As we all know, a song is a mix of music and lyrics. Some people are known for putting a special touch on one or the other. How about your songs? Are you meticulous about finding the right sound to accompany the words that I think you take pride in?
I don't know if I'm meticulous, but I'm pretty fussy. You know, it's definitely a gut thing for me. Sometimes everything comes at once, and you know how it fits together. It's like having a puzzle in a box with just a couple pieces missing. You kind of get how it's going to look. It's sometimes easy, and it's sometimes a little bit more difficult. It's always rewarding. It's when it starts to fit together like it's supposed to.
Second part to that question would be, does a Charlie Parr song have to feel a certain way for you to be happy with it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of songs that I guess I've written. I mean, I don't really believe that songs are ever really completely written. I don't think they're done.
Okay.
But there's a lot of songs that I've written that are definitely not me and didn't feel like something I was ever going to play or sing, so I've, you know, disregarded them or dismantled them and taken little bits and pieces of them. I've had songs that the music, you know, woke me up, but the lyrics were were dead, and so mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're kind of stored them away or rewritten them. But yeah. yeah, I mean, I think that's maybe for other songwriters. That's you've definitely got something you're looking for.
Singer-songwriter extraordinaire Charlie Parr is with us on the telephone here on Spectrum West. He's coming on the 11th of June, by the way, to Western Wisconsin, the Blue Ox Music Festival. That website is blueoxmusicfestival.com. Do you think about, now that we've talked about how you write, the people listening to your songs, do your songs have an intention as it pertains to the listener? I mean, do you want songs to make something happen inside, or is it enough that they just tap their feet and feel like dancing sometimes?
Well, I don't think there's that, for me anyway, I don't think there's that kind of intent going into it. You know, the songs kind of come out the way they come out. It's kind of almost private. I mean, I hate to use that word a lot. It is kind of private. Music's always been kind of private for me. And when it comes out and people relate to it or they're moved by it, either physically or emotionally, you know, I'm always really, really flattered and pleased about that. But it never seems to be something that you go into it kind mm-hmm. of aiming for. You know, the version of the song on the record, you give it out to the world, you know, or release it on the record, and it's not really yours anymore. It's people who are listening to it, if they like it or not. It's mm-hmm. kind of, it's in their world now. That version of the song is gone, and you keep on writing that song. You know, the next night at the show, that same song will find a new mm-hmm. way to sound, you know.
Are you a prolific writer, or do you wait until something hits you?
I wait until things hit me, and lately I've been in kind of a spree, so it's been nice. You know, I find that if I sit down and try too hard to do anything, it usually doesn't work out so well for me. I'm much more able to do stuff if I relax and let it kind of roll on, you know. And that's the same with guitar playing. It just happens to be that, you know, guitar playing is something that I'll do every single day.
Yeah.
And writing will come up when it comes up. And when there's nothing there to create, then I go back and start trying to figure out what on earth Reverend Gary Davis was up to.
Mm-hmm. So. It sounds as if you may find it easier to write stuff at home. Or maybe it's the fact that you write different stuff at home than you would on the road.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely different. It's not necessarily less, but it's definitely different. I'm influenced by everything. I'm a sponge, you know. I'm just music, weather, you know, where I'm at. I've written songs on the road that I've really been happy with, but they've been, I can tell playing them now, I can feel where I was, you know.
It must be that music is in your head all the time, because as I was looking at, and I'm holding it in my hand at the moment, your new Stump Jumper CD, the first track, Evil Companion, the quote underneath it says, the guitar part has been crashing around in my head for a long time. Applied it to something that you overheard.
Yeah, that was a really uncomfortable conversation. I was not trying to eavesdrop. It was just in a bar where, you know, people were talking loud. Wow. This guy was getting upset, and his companion was nonplussed. You know, she was not having any of it, and he was trying everything he could. He reeled off some really good lines, though, and for some reason they stuck in my head and became married to this music that was also stuck in my head. And, you know, if I knew who he was, I'd actually probably want to give him songwriting credit. He had some good stuff.
Were you taking it down by memory, or did you grab a napkin,
well,
or what?
I was actually trying not to listen because I felt bad. It was a bad thing, you know. But then later on, it kept, like, coming back to me. It's like, oh, I remember. Oh, he said that. Oh, my God. That poor guy.
Now, again, this new CD, Stump Jumper, was recorded in North Carolina. I read that it's the first time you've been outside of Minnesota to do an album. Was that just convenience and circumstance that it needed to be done there, or is there something that we can notice about this particular set of songs? Are there hints that it's a first, that you're not close to home, et cetera?
This is really weird. The whole thing was done in collaboration with my friend Phil Cook, who's from Eau Claire. He lives out in Durham now. He was going to help me with this record and play on it and produce it. And he said, I'm out, you know, here by Hillsboro. There's a farm out there here that we could record at, and it's great. It's beautiful. It's a different setting. And so I get out there, and it is. It's gorgeous. It's really also from Wisconsin. I walked out the door and I said to Nick, I said, man, this looks like Minnesota or Wisconsin to me. Hmm. The same trees, and it's just beautiful, and the weather was the same, and I was around people that I felt happy and comfortable with, and it didn't really feel like I was that far away from home.
So did Charlie the Sponge soak up a bunch of stuff out there that's going to result in some tunage?
Yeah, there's a bunch of new songs that I'm working on. I'm going to try to record in November. This last year has been a year of travel for me. The songs that are coming out more reflect kind of those environments. Mm-hmm. And I think some of it's pretty good. We'll have to see.
It sounds like a good title for another CD, Sponge.
Yeah.
Huh? People would go, what? They'd want to read the inside cover more, and they'd buy it. See, so
there you go.
While you're playing at the Blue Ox Music Festival next week in Eau Claire, are those kinds of things some of your favorite venues to play, the outdoorsy kind of stuff?
Oh, I love playing outside, yeah, and I'm really looking forward to the Blue Ox. I mean, I kind of like everything. I'm so much fun to do this right now. You get to sit down and play guitar, and I've played in little kind of cramped venues that I've loved, and I've played in bigger places that I've loved, and I always love playing outside. It's hard to find something to complain about when someone is going to let you sit down and play the guitar.
Well, you're a very good singer, very good songwriter, very good guitar player, and I just found out that you're a good guy, too.
I appreciate that.
Good for you. Charlie Parr, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on today.
Say hello to Mom.
I will.
Okay.
Well, weekend's almost here. I can feel it from Thursday. All my friends are getting wound up. Getting up some money, getting us a bottle, and getting my Bronco gassed up. We are thumb jumpers, we are cross tie walkers, we are grown up kids of the working class. And I work when I can, and I ain't got no money, and I may look rough, but I'm an honest man.
That's Charlie Parr. As I said, that's Charlie Parr. He actually opens the main stage portions of the three-day festival at 5:30 p.m. Thursday, June 11th. BlueOxMusicFestival.com features a great Charlie Parr performance video when you click on Charlie's name on the Thursday lineup. Hey, thanks, Ms. Jacoby, for your lively promotional attitude. To Debbie Brown and Dean Kallenbach for saving what I do. To Rich Kramer for coming to the rescue. And to you guys out there, for coming to the dance. We'll do it again next week with more on the Blue Ox Music Festival, summer concerts and recitals at UW Eau Claire. Say it with me, and more, always more, on Spectrum West. This is the Thursday variety. Remember, it airs again Friday evening at 7 p.m. on the News and Classical Music Network stations. See you next week.